All right, what up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of AI Roundup. Today, we're going to be talking about the scales of justice tipping against AI. Interesting. Plus, tell me how you really feel about AI at your job. And before we wrap up for today, we're going to be playing with Firefly. Adobe now has generative fill inside of Photoshop, the beta at least. Let's try it out. All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome back. It is AI Roundup Wednesday. I'm your host, Phil Buck, and I'm super excited about today's show because we're going to be talking about some themes and some subjects that are pretty much running through almost every story that we do here on AI Roundup, but we're seeing some progress in a way that we've honestly just been waiting for quite a while. And we're also going to play around with Photoshop's new generative fill tool. It's a lot like content aware fill and the remove tool that you may have played with, but now you can use the Firefly image generating suite natively inside of Photoshop, and I can't wait to play around with that with you guys. But before we do that, let's launch into our first story. We're going to be starting it off with the big picture and how the Supreme Court is weighing in with a decision that could have a major effect on the future of generative AI. All right, so in an article from Cointelegraph.com, the usage of copyrighted material in training AI models is under scrutiny as lawsuits claim this process infringes upon copyright protections. For instance, Getty Images is suing Stability AI, as we've talked about many times on this show, for allegedly using 12 million of its copyrighted photos to build an AI image generating model. Critics argue AI companies are making transformative use of original work and that it qualifies for fair use. Now, this is a big deal. However, a recent ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court in Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts versus Goldsmith clarified the definition of transformative use and could potentially impact generative AI development. In response to the legal uncertainty, some companies have restricted their training data to their own databases to avoid infringement claims. However, this could limit the effectiveness of the AI models and potentially stifle innovation and productivity growth. There's no consensus yet on whether generative AI usage of copyrighted materials qualifies as fair use, and the ongoing legal debates may shape the future of AI development. Okay, so let's talk about this. This is important. This is the first time we've really seen some legal cases coming down that would really change the way the fair use clause is going to apply to generative AI. All right, so I think it's worth noting that this particular case actually really doesn't have anything to do with AI. It's just specifically the fair use clause that, you know, if they continue to interpret it this way based on the Supreme Court decision, it could really have an effect on whether or not generative AI can be used the way it currently is. So this case was about how Andy Warhol used photos from a photographer, Lynn Goldsmith, and basically they decided that this photographer was owed a bunch of money because the fair use clause doesn't apply for commercial use, which was the intention of the art pieces that Andy Warhol made. So this is really interesting because if you look at what's going on, for instance, things like Midjourney, I think it's very questionable how their models were trained. It's not opaque at all as far as what the data they use to train it on, whereas you can compare that to Stability AI and Getty. You know, they do have services that they sell, but they also have open source models, and so there's a whole other can of worms there on that one. What I'm interested to see is there ever going to be any decision come down from this case Getty has against Stability AI? That's going to be a game changer because right now it's just all up in the air. It's up for the court of public opinion, which is very heated, and I am tired of the comment sections, I gotta say. And on that note, what I would like to clarify that I think is so important is what we've seen is that these models, the concept works. We have a proof of concept that you can use a neural net, you can take a data set, you can train it, and depending on, you know, the data that you gave it, which is always a nice time to refer back to garbage in, garbage out. You know, if you train it on data that's good, you're seeing that you're getting good results. I think the problem is now that we've done the proof of concept, there's a bunch of models that have been created that are very questionable ethically and that people are just, they're not going to be okay with it. This article did bring up Adobe Firefly and how, you know, it's talking about how the companies are limiting the data sets, which I think is the right move. It's the smart move for them, and it's a move in the right direction for the general public to accept this kind of technology. But it's also kind of referring to some other things that in the article they talked about, how Sam Altman was grilled in the Senate about, you know, hey, you're training these things on people's work they don't want it to be trained on. And, you know, the only defense that he had, and I think it is also applicable to what Adobe's doing, is that they're saying, oh, hey, we want to work with people to make sure that they're compensated. I think the problem is you can't do that on the back end, right? You can't just go train on them and then say, hey, we're going to pay you. I mean, the cat's out of the bag. You can't really, there's no way to get an accountant to do the work to make sure they're compensated fairly. I mean, this can honestly almost go back to, you know, the sampling of music and hip hop. I mean, you know, P. Diddy has to pay Sting, you know, I think millions of dollars a day for sampling his song Every Step You Take. And so that's what we're seeing here, is that people are acting first, asking for permission afterwards, which is usually a philosophy that I adhere to and I enjoy. I think maybe on an individual basis that works better. I don't think it's going to fly for corporations. So what do you guys think? I mean, obviously this case has started to tilt the scales a little bit for the first time, but there's so much more that has to come down as far as regulation. I'd love for you guys to sound off in the MMN Discord. I would love to hear what you think about all this. On top of that, for our next article, we're going to be talking about how all this applies to you in the workplace. So sound off in there. Let me know how you're using AI, because for our actual impact story, we're going to be drilling down on a bunch of numbers about what people think about using AI in the workplace and how many are already doing it. Okay, so this is for real, the actual impacts of AI in the workplace for our next story. This is a blog post from Checker.com by Sarah Karolovich. This is a huge comprehensive survey, at least I'd like to call it that. I do think it's worth noting that the sample set was only 3,000 people, but they did a great job of crunching the numbers here and getting some major interesting feedback about what people think about AI in the workplace. I would encourage you to check the show notes for the full report, because there's a ton of information, but I'm just going to hit some highlights for you here. First up, 85% of American workers have used AI tools to perform tasks at work. I'm telling you right now, I use it for this show. I've used it for MSP Dispatch. I use it for fun all the time. On top of that, 69% of workers fear telling their managers about AI use at work due to the fear of being replaced. I get it totally. In fact, when I first learned about that tool Autopod that I use for editing podcasts, I was a little hesitant to share it with Ray and the team, because I'm like, wow, are they just going to get it and take me out? But what I found is you still need an editor. You need somebody that's dedicated to using that tool. I will say you have to spend a significant amount of time setting things up to work for that tool. So I think this also applies to a lot of AI that I'm going to circle back to that at the end of the article. Let's hit some more of the numbers. 79% of workers feel pressured to learn more about AI tools. 57% of workers would take a pay cut for an AI-enabled four-day work week. And I don't really understand this one. I mean, why does AI come into that? Would people take a pay cut to work less in general? I think that would be a great follow-up question. Moving on, 86% of workers would take a pay cut to work less if AI could help them get their work done. I don't know, that seems weird to me. 79% of workers fear that AI could lead to lower pay for people in their positions. Okay, so I kind of get that. 74% of workers fear that the adoption of AI tools could lead to job loss. 67% of workers would spend their own money to enhance AI knowledge to avoid being replaced. And I totally get this. I've literally spent, I don't even know at this point, I've subscribed to ChatGPT, Midjourney, I've purchased Autopod. So yeah, I do understand that one. And 74% of workers believe AI layoffs will occur within the next 6 months to 2 years. I mean, we've already seen that to be true. We've actually covered it on MSP Dispatch several times. You know, it's happening. We covered the communications company in the UK laying off thousands because the investment they intend to make in AI in the future. And sometimes I'm not sure that that's 100% genuine. Like, I think sometimes the rhetoric is just used to justify things maybe they were already going to do. because, you know, I'm not going to keep reading the rest of the stats. I encourage you to go look at the report. It's really long and comprehensive, but being that it's 3,000 people, take it with a grain of salt. But, you know, what I've seen is, speaking specifically on the subject of integrating AI into your work, I've been using AI at my job, you know, in the last 6 months for sure, pretty regularly. I use it for this show to summarize my articles, to make bullet points of the articles. And, you know, I really got to say that it's not good enough yet. You know, this goes back to the last story we were just talking about in the big picture that, you know, these things, we have a proof of concept. We are able to sit down and use them in the real world to benefit us, but they're not flawless. And I mean, like, by a long stretch, they're not flawless. I mean, to make these things useful, in my experience, they really have to be piloted by a human and then supervised. You know, they have to be double checked to make sure that what is coming out is correct and usable. I'm going to give you two different examples. Okay, so for this specific article, I fed in the link and then I had to go back and check the information that it fed me back on the bullet points. It actually doubled down on a couple of different data points. It just rehashed them. It's not really useful for me. I don't want to read the same information to you guys twice. And then on the next story, I ask it to summarize the blog post from Adobe about their generative fill. And it was super disappointing. I mean, the information that it gave me was completely wrong. It was talking about how users can collaborate in real time and how, what else did it say? Oh, something about 3D images and just all this made up garbage. So the second case that I've been using it for is just at home. I love to do things with the AI art, the animations that you've seen at the top of the show. And, you know, I tried to use it to make one of those Wes Anderson videos. I don't know if you've seen these, but people are basically taking popular things like Breaking Bad and saying, you know, Breaking Bad by Wes Anderson, and they generate the images with Midjourney. A lot of people actually use ChatGPT to generate the prompts so that they can get a whole comprehensive list of the characters and in their settings. And, you know, I found I spent a lot of time with it. And in some ways it was great because, you know, when it comes to automation, that's really where it was key. I could get it to make a list of 13 characters. I didn't have to go look them up and then decide who was cast as what character. It just kind of like knocked all that out for me, which was great. But I still had to go back and give it more information about, you know, this person is probably not the right fit because their hair color is wrong. And for some reason, it would keep describing the hair color as the wrong color. On top of that, it would forget the cast. You know, as I started to go through, try to get some prompts generated after about 10 or so responses, it'll start naming the wrong actor to the wrong character. It was super frustrating. I'd have to keep reminding it. But again, as far as automation goes, you know, some of the things like I do for the animation at the top of the show is I use Deforum with Stable Diffusion, and you have to write out a series of prompts for that so that the images change over time. And say you want to have, you know, a repeating series of prompts, well, you could do some copy pasting, but then you have to go through and change the frame numbers, etc. I won't go on that other than just to say that using ChatGPT to write out the prompts and to iterate the frame numbers was extremely useful because there was no creativity required, no real memory. It was basically just math, like you saying, repeat these four prompts and advance, you know, the frame number 250 until you reach 3000 or something like that, which obviously I could do that. I could copy paste and I could go through, but it's nice to be able to just pop that in, let it run, come back in about 3 or 4 minutes, and ChatGPT has done it for me. So what is my point here? I think that what we're seeing from this report, the biggest takeaway for me is that people are already using AI in their work. I'm a testament to that. I'm using it for work and for fun. But I think a whole bunch of the other stuff about people being worried about it, you know, replacing them, reducing their hours, reducing their pay, this stuff about a 4-day work week seems like totally unrelated to me, to be honest. I think that's a whole nother conversation that you could have without the AI portion being involved at all. So all that to say, I think that, you know, if you're not using AI tools in your work, I think you probably should, you know, start to learn a little bit about how they could be used in your line of work, because I think coming down the line, what you're going to see is probably not people losing their jobs or losing their hours or losing their pay rate because of AI, but as you find new positions and opportunities, you might be outpaced by people that know how to use AI in those tasks. It may not even be a subject of conversation. It will just come down to productivity, efficiency, and, you know, someone essentially just doing their job better because they know how to use the tools. Again, let me know what you guys think if you're using AI in your workflows. I'd love to hear about it. But speaking of workflows, it's time for my favorite part of the show. I think we need to get into a use case. We can finally use Firefly inside of Adobe Photoshop. Let's give it a try. For our use case today, Adobe Photoshop adds generative fill with their latest beta release of Photoshop. And this is reporting from a blog post straight from Adobe by Pam Clark. Adobe has released the Photoshop beta app that includes generative fill powered by Adobe Firefly. This allows users to generate content from text prompts within Photoshop. Generative fill enables users to add, extend, or remove content from images non-destructively. The feature automatically matches perspective, lighting, and style, delivering realistic and mind-blowing results. Generative fill is integrated into every selection tool in Photoshop, allowing for exploration of creative possibilities. The contextual task bar in Photoshop simplifies the generation of new content. Users can generate multiple image suggestions and use traditional Photoshop tools to fine-tune the results. Generative fill is designed to be safe for commercial use and is trained on Adobe's stock professional grade images. Adobe emphasizes responsibility and transparency in generative AI through initiatives like the Content Authenticity Initiative. All right, so let's talk about this a little bit. I got to play around with it for a little bit. I'll show you some behind me of just what I was able to generate. That's without consequence. I just want to talk about what this actually means and what you can do with it. So first up, if you want to try it out, it's not in the latest version of Photoshop. It's just in the beta. So you can always get that by going to your Creative Cloud app, going to the beta section, finding Photoshop and download it. And then as soon as you use the selection tool, whether it's a, you know, rectangular marquee, lasso, whatever you select subject, all those things will immediately open up this generative fill bar that you can use to type a prompt and replace it. And I played around just to see, you know, how good it looked. And I saw a bunch of examples over the weekend of people using it. Something that was super exciting to me is, you know, people were taking things from Stable Diffusion and Midjourney and plugging them into Photoshop and using it to fine tune those generated images, which I think is a great idea. Now, I think at this point, it's worth pointing out, what does this tool have, you know, as an advantage over those other tools? First, I'll say with Midjourney, you know, there's nothing from Midjourney yet. I'm assuming because they've teased that, you know, they'll have a web app or something in the future, that some of these things will be coming to Midjourney, but it's a long way off as far as we know. But the quality of the images is pretty good. I mean, Midjourney has a style that is pretty difficult to mimic with Stable Diffusion. And I would say that Adobe Firefly is a lot closer than Stable Diffusion is. And okay, speaking of Stable Diffusion, I think that a lot of the users of SD will see that these tools that it offers, that Firefly offers in Adobe Photoshop, are pretty similar. So when you're talking about, you know, extending the image, that's often called outpainting. When you're using the selection tool to replace something or remove something, that's often called inpainting with Stable Diffusion. Again, I think one of the biggest advantages of this is that you can use all these tools natively in Photoshop. As far as I can tell, I don't even think Adobe Photoshop is using your local computer resources to power the generative fill, which is pretty exciting, because I think if you're running on a pretty dinky machine, you know, using AI to generate stuff is pretty tasking to the computer and can take a long time. I think the biggest trade-off is that, you know, Photoshop has a really refined user interface. It's better than any of these AI tools because, you know, you're running them for the most part in a web UI. So, I mean, while the tools are similar, they're just unrefined, you know? Photoshop is one of the top of the line photo editing tools, and now suddenly everything you know about generative AI is just living right there inside of Photoshop. I think this is super exciting, and honestly, I'm just now scratching the surface of what I can do with it, but I can tell you that look forward to some future episodes. I've got some things in the works, and I can tell you that I'm absolutely going to be using the generative AI tool in Photoshop to refine some of my images. So once again, stay tuned. All right, and before we sign off for today, I'd love to point you to some other things that'll be occurring on the MSP Media Network soon. Later today at 1 o'clock, Partner First, unlocking client budget to scale your MSP to new heights. Later this week, on June 2nd at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, we have a new episode of 38 at 38, as always on the first Friday of the month. This is another special episode. It's episode 13, which marks a one-year anniversary for the show. It's going to be cool. Aaron's going to be having a few friends revisit the show to tell him some new stories, and I'm looking forward to that myself. And as always, on Tuesdays and Fridays at 10 a.m. Eastern, MSP Dispatch, presented by the MSP Media Network.
Hi, I'm Ray Rossini.
And I'm Tony Francisco, and we're the hosts of MSP Dispatch.
Every Tuesday and Friday, we'll bring you the news, community events, and discussions that are important to MSPs today. Whenever possible, we'll also include industry experts to provide their insight, and all within 30 minutes.
Available on YouTube, Pocket Casts, Spotify, iTunes, and your favorite podcatcher in audio or video form. We're everywhere you want us to be.
We hope to see you next time on MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel.
All right, everybody, that is our AI roundup for today. As always, make sure you join us in the MMN Discord. I'll put a little QR code on the screen for you. Also, be sure to follow us on social media. You can find us everywhere at MSP Media TV. If you'd like to get your questions answered on the next episode of the show, you can send us an email at news@mspmedia.tv or leave us a voicemail at 833-MSP-NETWORK. All right, everybody, until next time, I'm Phil Buck, your host for AI Roundup. This has been your May 31st episode, and I hope you have a good rest of your week. I'll see you next time.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.